You are listening to a Pleasure Podcast. For more from our sex podcast collective, visit pleasurepodcasts.com.
I'm Tristan Taramino, and this is Sex Out Loud.
That's why I'm literally writing a whole book about my gender.
My mom and I were on BBC together talking about sex work and disability, which is something I never thought I would ever do.
Where do we learn about how to react to bodily fluids?
People have abortions more than we want to admit, and abortion is beyond healthcare. It's really body autonomy.
Someone talks about porn ruining sex. The question for me is, which porn?
I don't want anybody to fetishize my Jewishness who wouldn't stand next to me at a march.
I just wanted to show polyamory in a way that looks like polyamory.
If you're excited by sexual pleasure and sexual politics, you've come to the right place.
I've been this radical queer agnostic theologian for a long time.
They think that Muslims don't have sex.
There is a very specific history of racism and anti-blackness in this country.
I don't know who started this myth that after people are sexually assaulted, they never want to fornicate again.
We really don't think that change happens without knowing what we're for and not just what we're against.
Welcome to Sex Out Loud, everyone. Hey, have you ever thought while you're watching something on TV or in a movie, how do they coordinate those sex scenes? Or like me, do you judge all the sex scenes in TV and movies where you're like, that wasn't that great, or that was super hot? I'm actually watching Normal People right now on Hulu. And it's known for its like really good sex, and it has delivered. So the press said it was really good, and I watched it, and I agree, it's really delivered. So we're gonna find out all about what it means to coordinate intimacy on set today. My guest is Amanda Blumenthal, the founder of Intimacy Professionals Association, which is one of the leading organizations in the world for training intimacy coordinators. Amanda was the first intimacy coordinator in Los Angeles and has worked on hundreds of scenes involving intimacy. Amanda is a sought-after speaker on the topic and has spoken at the American Film Market, Women in Film, Film Independent, the USC Peter Stark Producing Program, and the Women's Production Society, to name a few. Additionally, she was a primary contributor to the SAG-AFTRA standards and protocols for the use of intimacy coordinators, and continues to work closely with the union on their Intimacy Coordinator Initiative. She's also consulted with the Producers Guild of America on developing materials for their Independent Production Safety Initiative, and was a contributor to the Time's Up Guide to Working in Entertainment. Prior to her career as an intimacy coordinator, she worked as a sex and relationship coach with private clients. She graduated from USC School of Gerontology with a degree in human development and aging. And so, full disclosure, I am a consultant for this company that we're going to talk about, Intimacy Professionals Association, although I don't do the intimacy part. So that's just me being transparent about my relationship with Amanda and the company. Welcome to Sex Out Loud, Amanda.
Thank you for having me.
You're joining us all the way from Boston, where you're not breathing in smoke.
Yes, I sure am.
Okay, so let's start out with some basics in case people are hearing this for the very first time. What is an intimacy coordinator?
Yeah, so the job of an intimacy coordinator is to help create a safer environment for actors on set when they're performing in scenes that involve nudity, simulated sex, other types of intimate content, while also helping the director to realize their creative vision. So there's a couple of core fundamental roles that the intimacy coordinator carries out. Some of them are, we are there to advocate for the actors. We're there to, you know, help make sure that they feel like they are being listened to, they are being respected, their boundaries aren't being violated. And we also act as an ally to LGBTQIA plus cast members. We act as a liaison and a negotiator between the actors and production as a way to interrupt the power dynamic that is present between directors and actors or producers and actors, because it can often be very difficult for an actor to say no to a producer or a director because those people have the ability to hire them and fire them, whereas we as intimacy coordinators don't, so we're somewhat outside of that power dynamic. We also facilitate clear communication and consent between actors. We ensure adherence to proper protocols, which includes things like making sure the set is properly closed so actors have privacy when they're filming these kinds of scenes. We make sure that they're using their modesty garments properly, that there are barriers in place when they're doing simulated sex, that the union guidelines relating to nudity and simulated sex are being followed. And then the other core piece of our role is that we're able to choreograph and also do movement coaching if that's something that's requested by the director.
So, real question I know the answer to, what the fuck were directors doing before intimacy coordinators came along?
That is a great question. So depending on how savvy of a director you had, the experience that a performer would have before intimacy coordinators when doing these kinds of scenes really ran the gamut. So you might have a director who would tell their performers, I would like you two to go, you know, go in a room set away from me and work on the scene yourselves and then just come back and show me what you did. And they would just be like, I'm just going to dump the responsibility of figuring this out on the performers. Whereas on the other end of the spectrum, you have some directors who are really comfortable with intimacy. They do a really great job, you know, talking through everything with their performers. It's a very collaborative process. They feel very comfortable choreographing intimacy and working with performers. And, you know, then there's other directors who basically harass the performers throughout the entire process and are incredibly inappropriate. So there's a wide range of experiences.
Wow. Because I mean, everything you said makes perfect sense. Mm-hmm. And so the striking thing is, like, why has this not been a key role all along, right? Especially addressing the power dynamics, because I agree with you that if you are in the scene and they ask you to do something that, say, wasn't in the script, or they want a little more nudity or something, whatever it is, there's a lot of pressure. You're in the middle of making a movie. And so there isn't a lot of wiggle room there to say, oh, I'm not really comfortable with this. I think maybe if you're a big star, like if you're Nicole Kidman, like you're like, yeah, talk to my fucking agent, loser. Yeah. Right. But you know, certain people wield that kind of power, right? And then other people may not have that power, but they may have a strong sense of advocating themselves. Like, nope, this isn't what I signed up for.
Yeah.
But a lot of people can just find themselves in these situations with no advocate, which I think is just, this is one of the crucial parts of what you do. And you can sort of run interference also between the actors and the director slash producer.
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the things that I often talk about with, especially with producers and directors who sometimes, you know, they may feel threatened by the position, they may not fully understand exactly what it is we do. And I often explain to them that different performers have a different level of access to their ability to say no. And so some performers, like you're saying, they feel completely comfortable, you know, standing up for their own boundaries, being like, I'm not going to do that, even if they're like put on the spot on the day sort of thing. They feel really great about that. But then there's other performers who don't. And it's actually been really interesting in my time working as an intimacy coordinator. I can't tell you how many performers I've worked with who are executive producers on their own projects, and they still are feel like they're being pressured, or there's pressure being placed upon them by a director, or say like another AP or a showrunner or something like that. And so I think that it's such an individual and unique experience of whether or not someone is able to, you know, feel able to advocate for themselves in this incredibly, you know, unique position that one may find themselves in.
Yeah. Yeah. Plus, as a viewer, for me, you know, obviously I think sex is important, and I think sex in a film should be kind of like everything else in that it moves the plot along. Mm-hmm. It reveals the characters, it causes tension, it resolves something, it introduces a new issue, whatever it is, right? Mm-hmm. Which sex does in real life. But there are times when I've been watching shows and I feel like there's been this amazing character development. The writing is really strong. And then it was as if the director said, okay, we're doing the sex scene now. So I want you on top and just, so just like have sex.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's what it feels like as a viewer. I'm like,
there's no vision, right?
Yes, there's no vision. Yeah. And like people are almost not in character even. Mm-hmm. This happens in porn, by the way, too. Mm. This is like when, you know, when they do these parodies and someone is like an alien and they have all this body paint and then they take their clothes off and they're just naked and they're not body painted. I get, you know, continuity people, like, don't take me out of the fantasy. But there is almost, you know, and I've seen porn directors do it. You know, the very famous porn director, Paul Thomas, I've been on his sets. He's super into the dialogue. He's super into the acting. And then when it comes for a sex scene, he's just like, okay, I'm going to go to the catering table. The camera guy is going to be here just to have sex, which yeah. seems like such a cop-out. And also does a disservice to the story as a whole when the director has not, or the scriptwriter, or anyone hasn't thought about who these people are in the context of sex.
Yeah. Yeah. No, absolutely. I completely agree with you. And, you know, I think that when you're dealing with film and television, people are going to bring their own attitudes towards sex to their work. And so,
of course.
Yeah. Yes. And so there's a lot of directors, you know, and also performers as well, and people in any position on a set who's involved in these kinds of scenes where, you know, they're just not comfortable with sexuality. Period. They're like, mm-hmm. this is like mm-hmm. their worst nightmare is directing a sex scene or performing in a sex scene. And so I think that's one of the really great things about having an intimacy coordinator is that, you know, all we do for a living is talk about sex and, well, simulated sex and, you know, what it means for the character and really delving into like the details and how do we make this like the best scene possible and really help to drive forward the narrative. Because, you know, like you were saying earlier, a really good sex scene adds to the story. There's a purpose. There's a reason. It reveals something about the characters and their journey and their plotline and all that kind of stuff. And so, you know, it's really unfortunate whenever you see a lost opportunity where a director or the performers have really shied away from leaning in to doing the scene full on. And I think that having an intimacy coordinator can really help with getting into, you know, the details of the scene and making it as authentic and gritty and realistic and as possible.
Yeah, you know, where this happened for me, I guess I'm going to call it out. I'm not going to dance around the subject, is with the TV show Jessica Jones. Mm-hmm. So Jessica Jones had an entire female showrunner, scripts, writer's room, and people loved it. There were so many good think pieces on like how Jessica Jones dealt with gender and power and sexuality and trauma and all this great stuff. But I felt very strongly like if these two people have superpowers and they're super into each other, why are they not having sex? Like they're two really incredibly powerful characters. I felt like it sort of like lost its steam whenever they got to the sex. And it just took me out of it. You know what I mean? I got invested in who these characters were. And then I felt like the sex scenes in Jessica Jones kind of sucked, which was disappointing because she was such an amazing character and there was such an amazing script. So there was like, it felt like an opportunity missed. You know what I mean? But it's true. It's like we, in the United States, we've all grown up with this sex negative culture.
Yeah.
So just because you're a brilliant screenwriter or just because you're a brilliant director, producer, or a brilliant actor doesn't mean that you have tools around sexuality, around how to communicate it, around how to portray it, yeah. around how to have it even just simulated. You know, I think it's asking a lot. You know, it's almost, do you feel this, that it's like, you're like a stunt coordinator, because no one would say, hey, we have this minor stunt. We want you to do it yourself. You're just going to jump from this to that. But we're not going to show you how.
Right. Yeah. No.
Right. We just think about what it might be like to punch someone and then do it. Right.
Yeah. No, we often draw a parallel between our work and that of stunt coordinators, because obviously stunt coordinators are in charge of safety when performers are doing stunts. And mm-hmm. we, as intimacy coordinators, are in charge of safety when performers are doing nudity and simulated sex. And within that, for both positions, we're also supposed to make it look realistic. Like, mm-hmm. there's a lot of stunts that are actually, you know, gags. Like, they're not actually, like, punching the other person or doing right. you know, whatever. Like, it's all faked and so, or simulated. And it's the same thing with intimacy scenes, is everything is simulated. The performers aren't actually, you know, having sex or performing sex acts, at least in, you know, network and studio productions. And so it's our job to make it look real. And also, of course, to keep the actors safe. And for us, there's, I think, you know, you have to really consider, who is this character? How would they have sex? You know, how would they feel about the types of ways in which, you know, the director is asking them to have simulated sex, things like that, are such important questions that often don't get asked. And one of the fears that a lot of performers have coming into doing these kinds of scenes is they don't want to feel like their own personal lives are being exposed on screen. And so mm-hmm. it's really important, I think, to always bring it back to character. What would your character do? How would your character have an orgasm? What kind of sounds would your character make? You know, what kind of sex positions, all that kind of stuff. And so it helps to kind of, you know, keep a separation between the performer's actual sex life and then the character's sex life.
Yes. Yes. Okay. We got to take our first break. I'm just full of questions, Amanda. I'm full of questions. Okay. Let's take a break. And when we come back, more about intimacy coordination on the set. Stay with us. When I want to feel more centered and grounded, I grab my phone, open the Calm app, and do a 5-minute meditation. Some of their latest daily guided meditation topics have been the art of letting go, finding peace within chaos, using sound for mindfulness, or how to prioritize what's truly important. Maybe you haven't meditated before. No worries. There's a great program on how to meditate. And there's also plenty more. Music, sleep stories, breathing exercises, even stuff for kids. I've been having trouble getting a good night's sleep, and the Calm sleep stories really help. Calm has a lot of tools to make you feel better, and who doesn't want that? For listeners of the show, Calm is offering a special limited time promotion of 40% off a Calm premium subscription at calm.com/Tristan. That's hundreds of hours of programming. Calm's entire library and new content is added every week. Get started today at calm.com/Tristan for 40% off a premium subscription. That's calm.com/Tristan. Over 85 million people around the world use Calm to take care of their minds and get better sleep. Welcome back to Sex Out Loud, everyone. I'm talking today with the founder of Intimacy Professionals Association, Amanda Blumenthal. She works as an intimacy coordinator on sets of television, film, web series, and also trains other intimacy coordinators. So before the break, you were talking about how people feel, I mean, people can feel sort of vulnerable in these scenes where they don't necessarily want to like reveal themselves sexually. So you really put the focus on the character. And I think that's important. You've worked on shows like Euphoria, The Affair, L Word, the Generation Q, the next iteration, How to Get Away with Murder. So tell me what a typical day on a set looks like, or is there no typical day?
Yeah, so there is a process, you know, to how a set day runs, but obviously every set is different and there's always things that come up that you could never anticipate. We do a lot of our work during prep before we even get to set. In making sure that we have conversations with the director about, you know, how much nudity do you want to see in this scene? What positions do you think the characters would be in? How are you thinking about shooting it? What is the tone? All that kind of creative stuff. We talk to them about it. Then we have separate conversations with the performers to talk about the director's vision and find out, you know, do they feel comfortable with what the director's looking for? Do they have any concerns? Is there anything that they definitely don't want to do? What are their physical touch boundaries? You know, how comfortable do they feel with different types of kissing, things like that. And if there's any discrepancies between what the performer is comfortable with and what the director is looking for, then as the intimacy coordinator, we basically work as a sort of like a mediator kind of thing to figure out a way in which to get the director's creative vision, but do it in a way that's respectful of what the performer is okay with. And so once we have all that sort of stuff figured out, we'll typically do rehearsals. Sometimes they're ahead of time. Very often they are on the day that we are going to shoot. Mm-hmm. And depending on how collaborative the director is, sometimes we'll be involved with helping to choreograph. Other times we won't. And then on a shoot day itself, we will go and check in with the performers, review with them their nudity riders, which are the contracts that they sign that specifically state what is allowed to be shown in the final cut. And then we'll make sure they understand completely what sorts of modesty wear and barriers they'll be using that day. Part of, you know, doing simulated sex scenes, it's really important that the performer's genitals are covered if they're going to be doing simulated sex for sexual health and safety reasons. And then once we get to set and we do a rehearsal, we'll check in with the performers periodically, make sure everything seems to be going fine. And we also help troubleshoot if things start to go a little bit sideways.
Right, right. Okay, modesty wear sounds slightly Mormon to me. I'm not trying to be offensive to Mormons. I'm sorry. But that's what I think of, like the special underwear.
Yeah.
What is modesty wear? What does it look like? You know, I just watched a scene on a sitcom where a couple's sitting naked on a couch and they've covered all the parts either by crossing their legs or there's like a vase in the way, or you know how that sitcom-y thing goes. But what are they actually wearing when I see that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So typically for people with penises, they will be wearing some kind of pouch that has like a drawstring. So I just tell them, you know, put everything in the pouch and then you tie the drawstring really tight. If it doesn't hurt, it's probably not tight enough. I will sometimes have them put double-sided tape around the opening of the pouch so that it stays on just in case they get aroused. Otherwise, it can just like literally pop off, but that's why they have to tie it really tight. And then for people with vulvas, we typically have, they're called shibus, and they're like stick-on adhesive strapless thongs. And we also have, there's a version called hibus, which are a bit bigger to accommodate someone who has a penis and testicles. And so they can wear those as well, but I find that a lot of performers with penises prefer the pouches, because they don't like the adhesive, and which can be very painful if you have any kind of body hair, to remove.
Or just skin.
Yeah. It's the adhesive in the actual hibus and shibus, which by the way, were not originally made to be modesty wear.
What were they originally made?
They were originally made for if you're wearing like a skin tight outfit and you don't want panty lines. So they're like a fashion item. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So,
and they're disposable.
Yeah. Well, actually, technically they are reusable, but we always throw them out.
That's just weird. Okay. So I know a little bit about this. Back in the way, 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 way back time machine in 2004, actually 2003, I worked on a film with Spike Lee called She Hate Me. There were a bunch of lesbian characters and he brought me in to script, you know, to do script reading and make sure that there's authenticity, but also be on the set for the sex scenes because, I mean, he didn't say this outright, but he had no idea how lesbians had sex. right. So he wanted to look good. And actually during a scene, I was in the bathroom that was attached to a bedroom where the scene was happening and a woman's supposed to walk into the bathroom, and then a bunch of other action takes place in the bedroom. So, Monica Bellucci actually like came into the bathroom and just like peeled off her little modesty thing. And I was like, so I'm standing in the bathroom with Monica Bellucci and she's completely naked. So what about people who are like, I don't care about nudity. Like I don't, not when you're with other people. Obviously we need barriers when you're with other people, but what about people saying, if I'm just supposed to be laying in bed naked, I'll lay in bed naked. I don't need a little shield.
Yeah, it really, it depends on the context of the scene. And so if a performer is just going to be by themselves, they're not going to be touching other people in any way, and you know, they're like, I'd rather just be naked, then as long as we are able to cover them in between takes so that when the crew has to come in and do their work, they're not being exposed to the performer's nudity when it's not actually necessary in the workplace, then it's, in my opinion, at least, it's like, it's perfectly fine if the performer wants to be naked and, you know, that's what's called for in the scene and that's what they're comfortable with, then great. And I think that, you know, in different cultures, there's also obviously different attitudes towards like people being more naked than they have to be. And so it's been really interesting to kind of see how that's played out as intimacy coordination has spread internationally. Because I find in the US, a lot of the time, people are like, I want to be as covered as I possibly can. Whereas when like we're working with like Australians, they're like, do I have to wear this? And that's obviously just like a really big generalization.
But right.
But okay. There's very different attitudes depending on the cultures that people come from.
Wow. So I feel like universally, not necessarily anyone you've worked with, and maybe this is changing, but whenever I hear actors talk about sex scenes, whenever they're interviewed about sex scenes, they overwhelmingly say, it sucks, it's awkward, it's not sexy. Why is that? And can you, as an intimacy coordinator, change that experience?
I think that for most people, sex scenes, performing in sex scenes will always be inherently unsexy just because of the context of the situation, meaning, you know, you have like maybe 10 to 15 crew members who are around, like as this is happening, you have really hot lights on you, you know, you have like a boom in your face, like there's just like, you know, you have adhesive all around your like genital area that might be like tugging on pubic hair or something like that. There's just like all sorts of things as part of the performing in the sex scene that just make it feel so unsexy to the performers. But I think that, you know, we can help them to create a sexier performance if that's like the kind of tone, you know, that the scene is about. But I think that in terms of like making it a better experience for performers, I think that's absolutely possible. I think part of the reason why performers, many come away saying sex scenes are just awful to shoot or they don't like it or what have you, is because in the past, a lot of performers, their experience would be you're going in with no plan. They don't know what there is to expect that's going to be coming at them. In the past, directors and producers used to be able to change their minds about how much nudity or simulated sex they were going to ask of the performer on the day. That's no longer the case because of some new guidelines from SAG-AFTRA that were passed this year. But when you have an intimacy coordinator and you have a plan, you talk ahead of time about, you know, what is exactly that the performer feels safe doing, feels good about doing, what is it that they're okay with showing. They know exactly what the modesty wear situation is going to be. And then there's a conversation had between all the performers in the scene about, you know, what are their physical boundaries? Where are they okay with being touched or not okay with being touched? And also, you know, what kind of kissing are they okay with? Because, you know, having someone stick their tongue down your throat without expecting it or wanting it is something that's going to ruin a scene really fast. You know, and when we talk about all these things ahead of time, it creates for a much better experience.
Right. Are there people who have riders that say no tongue kissing?
Typically, you wouldn't put kissing into a rider. Okay. So, I mean, if someone was really adamant and you had a studio that was willing to do it, I think theoretically you could, but typically we don't put that in there. It's just something we'd have as a conversation. And I would very gently remind the other performer in the scene of, you know, probably at least twice on the day of shooting.
Okay, we're going to take another break. When we come back, we're going to hear about what it takes to be an intimacy coordinator and what the training process is like. So don't go anywhere. I got a treasure in the mail recently, and it's called Intensity by Pour Moi. If you've got a vulva, you're going to love it. It's like a Kegel exerciser and a vibrating toy rolled into one. Intensity helps you do your Kegel exercises better by automatically exercising the muscles of the pelvic floor for you. Intensity teaches you how a properly performed Kegel feels, and it tightens and tones those pelvic muscles. And because it vibrates, you'll enjoy this exercise. I worked out and got a great orgasm in the process. Pour Moi is offering our listeners $25 off of Intensity when you go to pourmoi.com and enter the code Tristan at checkout. That's Pour Moi, PourMoi.com, and use promo code Tristan for $25 off. For a limited time, they also have a sale on their website right now for $40 off with the code Sunshine. You can actually use both codes for a total of $65 off. So, pourmoi.com, the code is Tristan. Pour Moi Intensity, Kegels with a kick. Welcome back to Sex Out Loud. I'm talking today with Amanda Blumenthal. And Amanda, you're the founder of Intimacy Professionals Association. So, this is a new field. This is, like you said, there have been some new guidelines passed only this year, which I'm sure has taken meetings and more meetings and, you know, reports and all that stuff. So it's a growing field, and you also train other intimacy coordinators. So tell me a little bit about that. What kind of training do they get? And what is it like?
Yeah. So the reason why I created a training program in the first place is because when I started working as an intimacy coordinator, there was no training program. There was basically nothing. And so I had to sort of figure it out, a lot of it on my own. And it became very clear very quickly to me that the industry needed more coordinators. And that's why I created my training program. So the way that my program runs is we do about 16 weeks of training, meeting every weekend for 4 hours at a time. And the types of topics that we cover are obviously intimacy coordinator basics and fundamentals, but also consent, boundaries, and power dynamics. We talk about sexual harassment. We talk about race, power, and intimacy. We go over SAG-AFTRA nudity guidelines. We go through all the IC protocols, as well as how to read and understand nudity riders, which are often complex legal documents. We cover modesty garments and barriers, as well as the intimacy kit, which is a kit of items that we bring to set with us so that we're prepared for basically anything that can happen. We cover how to work with actors and directors, as well as how to do choreography and movement coaching. And it's really important, obviously, for an intimacy coordinator to understand how a film set works. So we go over navigating a set in the production office, as well as cinematography basics, since you need to be able to converse with a director about that sort of thing. We cover a lot of sexuality and gender literacy, as well as how to be an advocate and an ally to LGBTQIA+ cast and crew members. And we also do a lot with trauma awareness and different types of communication skills, because a lot of the job is being able to be an effective communicator and advocate. And then the final piece of the training that we do towards the end, because I think it's important that everybody be able to market themselves and have a career, is we go over professional development. So I just like to make sure that my students are all set up on a professional levels so that they can go out into the marketplace and start to work.
And what kinds of feedback have you gotten from directors and actors that you've worked with?
I've gotten a lot of really great feedback from both performers and directors. And, you know, there will always be haters is what I like to say. You know, some are just never going to be on board with working with an intimacy coordinator.
Really? Okay, wait, let's interrupt that. So you've had situations where in a scene where the actor or the director sort of resents your presence or is annoyed by you or what?
Yes. Well, so let me tell you a little story. So there was this one show that I was hired to work on. They intended to have me on all of their scenes. And as they were introducing me to one of their top cast members, she met me. She proceeded to ask me if I was a prostitute. And then she said she would not work with me. That was about the extent of the conversation. After I told her, I was like, no, I'm actually not. This is what I do. She was like, well, I don't want to work with you anyway. So, you know, there's a lot of people that have preconceived ideas about what the job is, or they just, for whatever reason, it irks something within them and they don't like it. I find that a lot of the time, the performers who don't want to work with an intimacy coordinator are women over the age of 45 or 50 tend to be the most resistant.
Fascinating.
Yeah. So that's been, and then sometimes there are directors who just feel really threatened by the presence of an intimacy coordinator. They're really afraid that the IC is going to take over their job or, you know, tell them that they don't know what they're doing or something like that.
Because they don't. But anyway, go ahead. I mean, they don't in this area. Like you can't, I guess, technically a director could take the training, right? And,
yeah.
And know all the fundamentals, but your job is not, you know, no one trained you in film school to do sex scenes.
Right.
Did they? No.
No, 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 they did not. And the other thing is that like also a director couldn't do both their job and the intimacy coordinator job because of the power dynamic that's present mm-hmm. between the director and the performers. And oftentimes the directors who are resistant to working with an intimacy coordinator, they have a lot of difficulty wrapping their minds around the fact that their performers may not actually feel comfortable speaking up in front of them because they're like, oh, but I'm a safe person. They can say whatever they want. And they don't understand the positional power that they have from just being the director on the set.
Well, we also have to address the elephant in the room, which is that the vast majority of directors in Hollywood, especially on funded, well-funded projects, are men and, yeah. and white men at that.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, again, if you feel like you're the wokest guy in the world, you still aren't. You know what I mean? As far as I'm concerned, like you still need a little bit of help. Like, because I can totally see this guy. I can see the guy you're describing, which is like, no, I'm like super cool. I'm like, my wife is a feminist. Like it's no, I'm not going to exploit anyone. I'm not going to, you know, just not getting the inherent power dynamics and the inherent stuff going on. Like, no, I respect women. I wouldn't ever blah, 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 blah.
I have a daughter. Yeah.
Oh, I have a daughter. Oh, that's a great one.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a great one. It's really interesting the notion that production would hire you and you come to a set where they are not welcoming you with open arms. I mean, the story about the actress is just bananas, first of all. Like, that's just bananas. And the fact that she used the word prostitute kind of says it all.
Yeah.
To me, you know what I mean? Like, very outdated ideas about what's going on here and about sexuality. But I imagine it's difficult for you to negotiate. And I also wonder if you've ever had the experience, you know, there has been criticism that some producers are hiring intimacy coordinators simply to cover their asses in the wake of Me Too, in the wake of all of these allegations and assault. And so, you know, you can see a studio being like, oh, and we have to add a line for the intimacy coordinator. We got to have that so that like nothing comes to bite us in the ass and blah, blah, blah. Have you had meetings with people who you feel like are totally not invested in the process, but are like, hey, you got to like sign the form. So we say we did it.
Oh, completely. It like, I would say a good amount of the productions I work with, they hire right now, at least they're hiring an IC because they're either being told by the studio that they have to do it, or they have someone on their production that they're concerned about, or they're just doing it because, like you were saying, they feel like they need to cover their asses, and that might be because they have, you know, a scene that has sexual violence in it, or they have a scene that has very young performers who have never done intimacy before, and it's a very complicated scene, or something like that. And I think, you know, obviously, on some level, there probably is a concern as well for performer safety and well-being, and especially when you're doing series work, you want to keep your actors happy if you're a producer, because you want them to continue to agree to do intimacy work, especially if it's important to that particular production. So you don't want them to have a really bad experience, because if they do, they can change their minds at any point throughout a season and be like, fuck it, I'm not doing this anymore. And there's nothing they can do about it. And if it's a series regular, they're probably not going to recast the person.
Wow. Again, this is just part of the larger culture though, right?
Yeah.
No one would ever say, we don't really need a stunt coordinator, but like, okay, you're here, like do your thing. Like no one would say that.
No.
But they say that about intimacy coordinators because of the devaluing of sex, because of these sort of stereotypes about like, everyone knows how to have sex. So of course you could have simulated sex. Mm-hmm. Everyone knows that. Everyone knows how to say yes and no and can do it freely without any constraints whatsoever. You know, I feel like you're still in the web. You're still in this web of how we don't treat sex as the sort of nuanced, complicated thing it is.
We
slap it on billboards, or we like throw it in there to make sure that, you know, people are buzzing about it, but we don't value it. We just don't value it.
And
you're right in the middle of that.
Yeah. And I think the other thing also, because I've had, you know, the stunts versus intimacy work discussion so many times, and I think where producers particularly get hung up is they understand why a stunt coordinator is necessary, because if a stunt goes wrong, someone can literally die on set. The threat of physical harm is something that people can see. And so it's very easy for them to wrap their minds around why it's important. Whereas when we're doing intimacy work, obviously there are things physically that can happen that can cause harm to a performer, but that's much less likely than a scene going completely sideways and causing some kind of emotional or mental, you know, harm or trauma or something like that. And unfortunately, that's just something that, you know, because it's more abstract, producers can't see it. I think they're much more able to deny the existence or even the possibility of it. And so we're working with, you know, harm and trauma that happens in a realm that people can't see, whereas stunts is very physical. And that's something that we've had to do a lot of education around, is that there are so many performers who have been so deeply traumatized by experiences that they've had doing intimacy work on sets. And we know that there's a better way to do this, and that doesn't have to be their experience.
Right. Oh my God, that's such a good point. Just the recognition of psychological harm, right? The recognition that this is a really intense process, and it's not because you're like hanging off a building by your fingertips. It's such a good point, right? No one wants them to fall or get hurt or set themselves on fire or whatever.
Yeah.
But the idea that making a film could also be really intense psychologically, with or without sex scenes, by the way, with scenes of violence, with scenes of aggression, you know, with all sorts of things that can be triggering. It's really fascinating, because it sort of confronts people with a different set of expectations about caring for performers. You know, because I feel like when I made porn, like my performers were the center of the universe and the project. And it was all about them. Mm-hmm. And if I could meet their needs on set for what made them comfortable and what made them feel valued and respected, then they're ultimately just going to have an easier work day, right? Than someone, you know, offstage yelling at them, which I've certainly seen directors do, just yell at actors. And so, yeah, it's like, this is a part of focusing on the care of people mm-hmm. on the set.
Yeah. Yeah. And you also get a better performance when they feel safe and comfortable and they're not on the verge of tears because their, you know, director has been screaming, show me your tits more or something like that, you know?
Right. Right. Yeah. So I think this is the new, you know, people talk about my friend, Dr. Robin talks about this ethics of care. Mm. And developing an ethics of care. And I feel like, you know, now more than ever, it's so clear that we need more empathy and compassion in the world, obviously. And it's, you know, it's a shit show out there. But this seems to me to fall under that, which is that we need to get better care of each other. And if that means having an advocate there and having someone to talk it through and having someone to go to if you have issues, I mean, it seems like a no-brainer. It seems like if you were a director, you'd want this no matter what. And so I hope more people get on board. What do you think is like the percentage right now of people who use intimacy coordinators?
That's a good question. It's really hard to say. I mean, in terms of like who has actually mandated it, currently HBO is the only studio that has done so. So all HBO productions that have intimacy work have intimacy coordinators.
Fascinating. Yeah. Only HBO.
Only, and they did it over 2 years ago. And no one else has gotten on board publicly. So there are a couple of other studios that have internal policies on like the down low about this kind of stuff.
Oh my God. And, I mean, the irony of that is just insane.
Yeah. And so, and I don't think that they enforce it either, but they like, you know, highly encourage their productions to do this. And on some projects, they may be more insistent if it has more, you know, high risk work involved. But yeah, it's, we all thought that more studios would have policies and go public and follow HBO, and they just haven't done it yet, which is mind blowing because it's like, don't you want to be seen as a company that values safety?
And actors.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And as like, you know, a place that takes sexual harassment seriously, especially in like, you know, the hashtag Me Too and Time's Up era. But they just haven't done it yet. So it's really hard to tell. Yeah.
So we've got to sort of wait and see if this becomes the new norm, which of course I, as someone who's invested in sexuality, really hope it becomes the new norm.
Yeah, we're really pushing for that. And the reason why we wrote the standards and protocols for the use of intimacy coordinators guidelines with SAG-AFTRA is that we are actively working on becoming a covered position within the union. And so we're hoping that once that happens, obviously it'll help make this job more sustainable because we'll have mandatory minimums for day rates and weekly rates and things like that. And we'll also get healthcare and a pension and all that great stuff. But also what we're hoping is that once we are able to become a covered position with the union, they can then say that this position is required whenever scenes of intimacy are being performed, just like whenever you have a stunt coordinator is a requirement.
Exactly. Go unions.
Yeah.
Go unions.
So 3 more years, we're hoping. Next collective bargaining agreement is in 3 years, and that's our goal.
Well, thanks so much for taking the time to talk to me. This has been great and very illuminating. I hope people enjoyed the show because it's just as a consumer of media, it makes me feel better to know you're there.
Yeah, absolutely.
So Amanda's website is intimacycoordinator.com. for the organization, Intimacy Professional Associate, Intimacy Professionals Plural Association.com. On Twitter, at IPA Los Angeles. On Instagram, Amanda is Amanda_Blumenthal. And there's also the account at Intimacy Coordination. And on Facebook, Intimacy Professionals Association. I want to thank my engineer and editor, A-Rod at FTC Designs. You can follow him on Twitter at FTC-Designs. New episodes go up on podcast platforms on Mondays. You can find me across all social media at Tristan Taramino. And until the next time, take some time to talk about sex out loud.